This is Steve Sherlock with another Franklin Matters radio show. This session shares my conversation with Senator Becca Rausch. Our conversation was conducted outdoor, appropriately socially distanced, on the Franklin Town Common. We were slowed in talking by the sound check by the Jesse Liam Band, preparing for their set of the last Concerts on the Common on Friday. So thanks to Jesse and his band for providing some interlude and some music for our conversation. Actually, more than one, as we stopped and started again. But it doesn't really detract from the overall, I think. Periodically, you'll also hear some wind noise. Note to self, when recording outdoors, even if it doesn't seem breezy, put the wind cap on the microphone. When we get to the conversation itself, Senator Rausch and I have a wide-ranging conversation covering state budget, town budget, health, schools, transparency, and some Franklin-specific topics. I learned, and you can hear of, Senator Rausch's background as a health attorney, which has helped her play a key part in her role in this pandemic period. The recording runs just about 41 minutes, so let's listen to my conversation with Senator Rausch.
Steve Sherlock here for Franklin Matters, Franklin Public Radio, WFPR-FM on the internet anywhere, and 102.9 on the radio dial in the greater Franklin area. This afternoon, we're outdoors, socially distanced, with Senator Becca Rausch on Town Common to talk Franklin and you're doing that affect us and help us. And so welcome and thank you for taking some time to do this.
Thanks, Steve. I'm so glad to be here. Thank you so much for having me. It is, we've got a gorgeous day in a gorgeous setting. The last time I was here in this exact spot actually was for the Black Lives Matter vigil.
Yes.
That was held in town, which literally blew me away. Not literally, but you know, emotionally blew me away. It was such an incredible experience to be here. I mean, over 1,000 people, maybe 1,500 people from the Franklin community and maybe some of the surrounding communities, all here to make a powerful statement that social justice, racial justice is necessary. And it was amazing and true to many of the rallies and vigils and protests and various standouts, all the various events, demonstrations that I attended in the aftermath of George Floyd's murder. True to form, the most compelling speeches were those of young people. And it's very inspiring for me to have such a tremendous opportunity to hear from young people, engage with young people. You know, they are the leaders now and will be our leaders for decades to come.
Sure.
And they are making a real difference. And they have influenced me and encouraged me to share some of my personal stories and bring their stories to my colleagues in the Senate. And I keep those stories very close as I consider budget and legislating and bringing resources back to our communities and showing up, you know, all throughout the district. Harder to do, of course, in a COVID world.
Yeah, it just complicates things when, other than being socially distanced, some places just can't go to because of the shutdown.
The strawberry stroll is one of my favorite things in Franklin. I have never missed one.
Yeah.
And
well, you're not the only one who missed it this year.
And yeah, we all missed it this year. I know, when I got the message, I mean, I figured that the cancellation would be coming. When we actually got the notice, I said, oh, that's sad. We do love that strawberry stroll so much.
Yep.
And, you know, we'll see what happens, I guess, with the Harvest Festival in the fall, but my guess is that we'll probably be in the same boat and that's going to get canceled too. My kids will be disappointed because they love the face painting.
Yeah. Rumor has it it's not going to happen, but you know, things can change. And as we know, and as we've seen, things do change. So who knows?
Every minute.
Who knows? Yeah. So to the night at the Common, I would have been here, but there was a town budget meeting that I was reporting on at the time. And since I had made it one of my goals to follow the money, that unfortunately was a little bit more important at that point.
Yeah.
And budget still is a significant piece. And from a state perspective, you haven't done your budget. I don't think the House has even done their budget yet, right?
That's correct. So we are waiting, as our basically every, you know, all states across the nation for the federal government to issue a package.
Right.
You know, unlike the federal government, which can both print money and operate at a deficit, we don't have that luxury at the state level. No. Certainly don't have that luxury at the local level.
Sure.
So what the state legislature has done is we passed initially a 1 month budget, an interim budget, and then we just passed in the last couple of weeks, at least at the time that we're recording, a 3 month budget that will carry us through till the end of October.
Right.
And I was really proud, especially as the Senate chair of the Municipalities and Regional Government Committee, that we level funded all of our local funding, and we actually provided a little bit of a boost. A very minor, small, but a little. Little bit of a boost to Chapter 70 education funding.
Yeah.
So I'm very grateful to the, you know, the leadership in Senate Ways and Means, House Ways and Means, who have, you know, made that happen. And was very, you know, proud to vote yes on that. But you know, as the municipalities chair, I have spent a lot of time since March working with regional governments, working with local governments, trying to figure out how to, you know, bring resources back, make the changes that we needed to make at the state level to support the functioning of local government, right? Also making sure that we take care of the people, right? People who might not, for example, be able to pay municipal utility bills in the midst of everything that is going on with this, you know, pandemic-induced recession. You know, so both a no shutoffs provision for those utilities, right? The last thing that we need is cholera on top of COVID, right? If people can't pay their water bills, for example.
Yeah.
But we also need to make sure our municipalities can continue to function. And that takes money and resources and, you know, tolling certain deadlines for permitting and other things like
that. Changing some of the regulations along the way, including to do remote meetings.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
So it's been a lot of really in-depth, detailed work that I did with my House co-chair, and you know, made sure that we could move those bills along. We passed four, I think, municipal bills to help all of our towns and cities continue to function, which have been successful, which is great. You know, Franklin certainly included. In addition to making sure that I, as a, you know, an advocate for all the people in our district, brought back, you know, as much funding as I possibly could to support everybody. Everyone needs a lot of support right now, you know, and all the issues that needed support before COVID didn't just magically go away. They just got exacerbated.
Clearly in some cases, some more than others, the problems and the systemic issues just got exposed in all their ugliness. It's unfortunate, but that's the way it is.
Yeah, and you know, one of my biggest concerns, right? I am a parent of young children. My spouse and I have two kids. One of them is in pre-K, or heading into pre-K, and the other one is heading into first grade, hopefully shortly, fingers crossed. You know, because I've been really focused on education and early ed and child care, which as an industry has been just woefully undervalued forever. But there is real educating that happens between the ages of 0 to 5. And we have not as a society valued that and made it a public good the same way that we have turned K-12 education into a public good. So it's much harder actually to infuse relief funds into a privatized system, which is what we have for early education and care. You know, we can more directly send funds to our K-12 schools because the system is different.
Well, and it's even interesting even in the K, because K is optional events.
Right.
There was some funding a while ago, and I believe it's all gone in terms of kind of incenting at least to get to a half day or a full day K program, and then when enough people came, then the focus kind of shifted, so the money went away.
Yeah.
I know I'm that close to it because my wife coincidentally had retired as a K teacher in Franklin for 20 plus years. So,
yeah,
I'm totally on board in terms of the early childhood ed. It's so critical to set that expectation, the routine, coming from a family environment of whatever means. into a school. That was first couple of years.
Yeah, absolutely. So I've been working really hard and collaborating with colleagues to set up a public-private trust fund for our child care and early education centers, right. Yeah. To try to provide not just funds, which they definitely need for PPE, sure. and cleaning supplies, other sorts of things to adapt to the moment, but also business advice and compliance, right? I mean, yeah. many of these places are, you know, small, very small businesses, and need bigger support. And there's a lot of new regulations to sort through from, you know, the Department of Early Education and Care, and we want to be able to provide that kind of resource, you know, in sort of a one-stop shop kind of place. So we worked hard to make that trust fund happen. Also, have been working very hard on K-12 and making sure that the K-12 schools in our district are getting as much support as I could possibly make happen. Right. So in one of the recent funding bills that did come through, I secured $250,000 for the schools in our district, half to go to PPE purchasing, and the other half to other resources and equipment, tools that schools might need to operate and function, support our families in this time period, which is consistent, honestly, with the work that we've been doing the whole time, supporting schools. In fact, in the fiscal 20 budget, one of the things I managed to make happen was a $50,000 funding for Franklin to run an anti-vaping program in the high school, which, you know, I heard from students and teachers and administration and parents that that it was quite effective. So I'm always thrilled to hear that you know, when we partner together and make good things happen, that they do in fact help people and you know, make the both people's lived experiences better and strengthen the community. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so that's a very long answer to your question, which is we haven't passed a budget yet for fiscal 21.
It's still on your plate of things to do.
Right, right. And the session has been extended, so we can actually take up the session in a normal year would be over by now. But we, both the House and the Senate, agreed to extend the session to the end of the calendar year. So we, you know, the next session will start that first Wednesday in January, but we have up until then to take care of business. And the fiscal 21 budget is top of the list. I would guess that we'll be taking that up in October because our 3-month budget is going to expire at that
point. You bought some time, literally bought some time with money, funding, et cetera. But at some point in time, no matter what the feds do, you're still going to have to make a decision.
Right.
Given the wins and the prospects that there are, you know, you'll at least also have had another quarter of, you know, how is the state doing in this time?
Yes.
Which clearly, you know, the July numbers came in, and granted, there was the extension through 715, and now receipts seems to have been up. Is that a one-time thing? Obviously, it's a data point. You need some more in order to put it in, you know, the context.
Right, right. And I think now that we have the taxes, you know, in, that definitely shifted things around a lot because, you know, our fiscal year changed.
Yes.
So all those revenues that were supposed to be realized in fiscal 20 didn't actually get realized until fiscal 21. So that is coming in. I think, you know, we're starting to see many aspects of our economy reopen and reopen successfully and safely, which I think is fantastic. I've had lots of conversations with small business owners, yoga studio owners, small gyms that can be done by appointment, you know, businesses that that have been very thoughtful and careful in their plans to reopen and to do so safely. But, you know, we're in a designated phase where they actually couldn't implement those plans, trying to help people kind of navigate that water to be able to get their businesses back open, you know, to help everyone, you know, keep their jobs, keep the business open, have, you know, some sense of normalcy. You know, I think bookstores have been doing a really interesting job, you know, scheduling a walkthrough of the bookstore, for example.
Yeah. Look, but don't touch.
yeah, exactly. But you can still, you can go in with your mask and your sanitizer and, you know, and keep your distance, and they're limiting the number of people that can come in. And of course, you know, all my respect to our food service industry, like grocery stores and other shops that have been absolutely critical the entire time and have done it safely.
Takeout before, obviously, then all the business went the remote and takeout. So.
Yeah.
And those who hadn't had to scramble to get there, it's been a change.
Definitely. It has definitely been a change. But I think, you know, for the most part, folks are adapting. For the most part, I see people wearing their masks. I see people sanitizing. I see people keeping their distance. And I just want to encourage everybody to really stay vigilant. It's hard, and people get tired. And I mean, we're human, right? We get tired. But I think that's particularly important with both our primary and our general elections coming up. I was very proud to be one of the leading champions for election reform for 2020.
Right.
You know, I was the first to, it was one of the first things that I started doing when it was pretty clear, at least to me and my staff and the medical experts that were talking to me, that we would still be in a pandemic by the time both September and November rolled around. And so we got to figure out what we're doing for our elections.
Yeah.
So I was really proud to write and file the most comprehensive vote-by-mail legislation.
Thank you.
You're welcome. We didn't get everything in my bill, but we got a lot of it. And I think we landed where we are now because I was working so hard to make so much change to make access to our elections and access to the ballot as broad as possible and as safe as possible. And I continue to put out information for folks, answer questions for folks. We've got a comprehensive voter guide on our website, a couple of explainer videos. Making sure that people can vote, you know, in one of three ways, right? You can vote by mail, you can vote early in person, and you can vote on election day in person.
Correct.
But if you go to the polls, please wear a mask, keep your distance, and use your hand sanitizer.
Correct. From a Franklin perspective, the town clerk just confirmed their schedule for the early voting.
Good.
I've started sharing that through the Franklin Matters readers, so you'll be getting more and more as that comes closer, which begins, you know, as we're recording this, it'll be August 22nd is when the early voting starts.
Right. That's also the last day to register to vote if you want to vote in the primary.
Correct.
One of the things we did in the elections bill is to reduce the number of lead days that people need to register to vote. So it's normally 20 days in advance.
Right.
This year it's only 10 days in advance. So early voting for the primary starts on Saturday, August 22nd. That's also the last day to register. If you want to vote by mail, the last day to do to submit your application is on Wednesday, the 26th. At 5 o'clock in the evening, so you've still got time to submit that application. Make sure you get your ballot in and complete it and submit it by the close of polls, which is 8 p.m. on Tuesday, September 1st.
Right.
And that's a little bit different for the general, actually. This is something actually that's really critical to elections access. A lot of people vote the second they get their ballot in the mail, and a lot of other people wait until the very last minute.
Sure.
So part of waiting until the very last minute means you need to give some extra time for people.
There's a sound check going on as well out here at the Common. They're getting ready for the concerts later
today.
Pretty
exciting. Anyway, so we wanted to make sure that folks who vote in the general election, which we expect to see really high turnout, that people are able to submit their ballots by mail. So if you get your ballot in the mail by election day in November and you get that postmark by election day in November, your ballot will still be counted so long as it arrives by 3 days later, by the Friday.
Sure.
So we've got a little bit of extra time in there. A number of good changes.
Yeah, it may complicate the counting depending upon what the results we're looking for, but at least the right to vote has been acknowledged and the vote will get counted.
Right. And I do want to encourage everybody who's listening, if you run into any issues, if your exterior mailing envelope shows up without postage, for example, it's another thing that I fought really hard to make sure that we would have postage covered. If you get the wrong ballot, if you get absentee instructions instead of early vote, you know, voting by mail instructions, please reach out to me and my team because we are tracking that and trying to make sure that whatever sort of bumps in the implementation that happen now, we work to kind of smooth those out before the general election happens.
Right, that's good. And monitoring mine along the way, Secretary of State has the tracking. So we had submitted our ballot request. I've been tracking it. It just got mailed. So I'm expecting it to be delivered sometime in the next day or so.
Yeah.
Into the mail.
Exciting.
And then I'm, because of we're in 4th District, not everybody listening perhaps will have the 4th District issue. And the candidates have just changed. One stepped out and endorsed another. So I may hold and see if somebody else is going to do anything before I vote. But other than that, to your point, yeah, as long as you get it, you vote, boom, put it in.
Yep. And you can mail your ballot or you can drop it off for your town clerk. There's ballot drop boxes in various different places. So the link to that ballot tracker and all the other resources you can need are on my website. It's BeccaRauschMA.com/2020elections.
Right.
And please go there.
Yes.
Direct your browsers to the site so that you can make sure that your vote gets counted. Your vote is your voice.
It is.
Speak it up.
Yeah. It's not just a right, it's a requirement. And you should execute it. And I know related to that, transparency has been a big issue of yours, I know, and having shared, certainly during the COVID and early in the pandemic, you were doing twice a week updates. Now I think you've come down to once a week. And respectfully, there's not been that many changes compared to what was going on.
Yeah.
And then doing video updates as well. So I think you're at least, from my point of view, making use of some of the social tools to help spread your word as well.
Thank you. Transparency is incredibly important to me. It was important to me before I ran for this office. And as I traveled through the district and talked to more and more and more people years ago now, it was clear that I wasn't the only one who was, you know, worried about transparency. And
I didn't go by.
The music is nice. The trucks.
Yeah. Well, and they may just time the drum perfectly to accent what you're saying.
Yeah. There it goes. Transparency is important throughout this district.
Yeah.
And we do. We have a variety of different tools to be able to make that transparency happen. And I'm very proud to be the foremost champion, not just in the Senate, but in all of the legislature for transparency in government. So that's part of why you can find all my votes on my website. It's part of why we send, in normal times, we send a monthly newsletter.
Right.
In COVID times, and, you know, this is part of having adapted to COVID, you know, my team and I were one of the first, maybe the first, to start issuing those COVID updates that you're mentioning.
Sure.
I'm glad you got them.
I do.
All of those are archived on my website, so you can still find them all.
Absolutely. And for your notice, too, I've shared those out to Franklin Matters.
Thank you.
I do edit the newsletter because in some cases it is certainly long.
Yeah.
And since I've taken it and put it in.
Don't know why you can't turn around.
Starting to talk about the newsletter, so I do shorten your newsletter, but I like that the link is there, so I'll put at least your opening statement, if you will. So we'll try that again. So
Go ahead.
I'm glad you don't have a time
to finish. Yeah, it's fine. No problem. We're sitting outside. It's been a beautiful day.
So anyway, I take your newsletter, include at least your opening statement, and then provide the link to the rest. And it's something I do with everybody's newsletters because they tend to be long, and I understand that. But to take that and then repurpose it in what I'm doing, effectively a digital newsletter itself, to put newsletters within newsletters, it's just... The email just would, people would never get to see what's at the bottom of it. So
that is true. I do appreciate you circulating that to make sure that the word would get out. And you know, those resources, the most important thing of those, particularly since COVID hit, was making sure that accurate information was getting to people, that realistic information was getting out to people.
Yeah.
As a parent of youngsters myself, you know, whatever resources I had found that were working for me and my husband and my family. I wanted to share those as well for folks. You know, and we were issuing the first...
a nice interlude, at least.
Yeah, I don't mind it. Also, someone tweeted Ed Markey playing basketball with my kids, so I'm amused.
Yes, indeed.
Where were we?
We were talking a bunch of things.
Getting the information out, yeah.
The newsletter and the shortening and
why
sharing info, etc. One of the things I learned in the run-up to this, which is always good, it's one of the reasons I do this, to learn so that I can also share as well. I didn't realize that you have a background in kind of infectious diseases as well. So you want to expand upon that? That obviously in the pandemic, but to a certain extent, there's a school of thought out there that because of climate change and everything else, this is not something that's just going to go away. There's an opportunity for things to clearly come back and come back. Mm-hmm. And for those with memory, you know, SARS, MERS, Ebola, you know, weren't that long ago.
Polio, even. Yeah,
polio, absolutely. So.
Yeah, polio, measles, pertussis, all sorts of things.
And shingles is the latest version of the measles piece.
Right.
Yes.
So. Yeah. So I was a healthcare attorney before I came to the Senate. I actually taught health law. Out on the West Coast at Seattle University School of Law for a couple of years as a visiting member of the faculty. So I come at this issue from a healthcare attorney and a health law scholar's perspective, and also as a parent, because there was a measles outbreak actually when one of our children was in their first year of life, and they're too early to get the vaccine.
Yeah.
But really, you know, when I started digging in on this as a senator, especially after having been a secretary level attorney in the state for Health and Human Services, I was really kind of blown away by the fact that we really don't have in Massachusetts comprehensive infectious disease prevention law at the state level. We just don't have it. It's kind of a a good warm-up set. So,
I think you were talking about measles and your little one at the time couldn't get.
So, there was a measles outbreak in one of our kids' first year of life, and you can't get the vaccine until 12 months, but this is, you know, the real problem when I dug in was that we're just missing comprehensive infectious disease prevention policy at the state level.
Yeah.
It's sort of a hodgepodge, if you will. And so I, you know, got to work, as we've done on a host of issues,
right,
that really impact people's daily lives,
sure,
health and safety and
yep,
jobs and transportation,
yeah,
and got to work writing a comprehensive bill that would help to prevent the spread of infectious disease and really create the infrastructure that we're missing. And we are missing it.
Yes.
We don't even have mandatory data reporting about rates of immunity. So we like to think we have a pretty high immunity rate in Massachusetts, but actually it's based on an incomplete data set, so we don't really know.
Right.
So there's a lot of this infrastructure that would actually be really important in the era of COVID, communicating and providing, evidence-based mm-hmm. information to people all throughout the Commonwealth. Didn't envision a global pandemic of epic proportions when I wrote the bill.
The forefront of the discussion because, to your point, we're going to need that. And certainly, even when the vaccine comes, whenever that is,
right,
there's certainly some segment of the population that are the anti-vaccine. Now, at what point in time, and how are we going to make those decisions, right? So even in the school situation, somebody who's not vaccinated, for whatever reason, do they still come into a classroom where the other kids have been vaccinated, and how do we deal with that?
Yeah, and that's that kind of decision would still be left to the Department of Public Health and the administration to make, as it is now.
Correct.
And the bill that I crafted and filed would not change that. The calculation, as you rightly point out, is sort of different in the state of emergency because of the public health crisis
sure.
that we are in at the moment. But again, those decisions are made by the health experts,
yes.
Right? Our job as the lawmakers is to make good laws that create the infrastructure that the experts in health or whatever the other issue may be, that they are empowered to and have the authority to collect the data that we need, for example. So I'm really proud of that. That bill was reported favorably out of committee in its first year filing, which was a really significant accomplishment. And frankly, it's one of several bills that I filed this session that have all been reported favorably out of committee. And, you know, the average time that it takes for a bill to get out of committee in this state is anywhere from 6 to 10 years. And as a first term senator, you know, one of the things I'm very proud of is that, you know, we have roughly a dozen bills that came out favorably in my first go around.
Sure.
And several of them have actually already passed the Senate, and a couple are actually in conference committee now,
yeah.
including a climate, you know, bill to address climate change, specifically to address carbon emissions from existing very large buildings,
right.
Where we don't have any law or regulation right now at all. And we do have, in fact, you know, this is Massachusetts,
sure.
we have a lot of existing large buildings already. And another one to address racial disparities in maternal health that is also sort of the differences between the House version and the Senate version are being worked out now.
Right.
But, you know, Black women in Massachusetts die at a rate of more than twice that of white women. Unacceptable.
Yeah.
You know, it is part of what the people who filled this town common were here to say, right? That kind of systemic racism, that kind of structural injustice
mm-hmm.
must not be allowed to continue.
Right.
And it is everywhere, right? I mean, that's why it's called systemic. It is in everything
yeah.
that we
yeah.
do. And you know, it's also why I've been working for you know, anti-vaping programs and making sure that we have supports to combat the opioid epidemic and schools, right? The problem, inequity in our schools. You know, I will never forget this till the day I die, but when I was talking to people in Attleboro, before I was elected, I had a mom, you know, talking to me about her kids' educational experience, and she told me that one of her children went to a public high school and they didn't have enough funding to provide him with a textbook,
right.
Just the textbook.
Mm-hmm.
And the textbook never came. The test on the material in the book, of course, came because the year goes on. But of course, when the test came, he failed the test because he never had the book to learn the material in the first place.
Right.
Right? Which is why I worked so hard to pass the Student Opportunity Act. And to file and successfully file and have a number of amendments adopted to that legislation to make sure that we get that education equity out there. Because it shouldn't matter what your zip code is.
No.
You should get a good education. All of our kids should get good education.
Right.
And, you know, that it's part of my you know, dedication to truly representing every corner of this very long and skinny district.
It's a unique opportunity for sure, but I think certainly I've learned as well, you bring some unique skills and background to it as well, specifically in this particular time period. So yeah, we're benefiting from that.
Yeah, having been a healthcare attorney is certainly a useful set of skills in
yeah.
this moment. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, thank you for your time, for coming to Franklin for the glorious day that we certainly had as well.
I love, you know, it's one of my favorite parts and also the most important part of what I do is being in all of our communities.
Sure.
You know, coming to Franklin, we talked about the Strawberry Stroll earlier,
yeah.
the Harvest Festival. You know, I've
yeah.
been to events and, you know, moments where communities come together to celebrate each other
mm-hmm.
all throughout the district. Right.
Yep.
One of the things that I set out to do is one of the first priorities that I talked about with my State House staff was to have office hours in person in every single municipality in this district, and we did that, and then COVID hit.
And then COVID,
you know, we were just about to start making the second loop and then COVID hit, and obviously that didn't happen, but we started having office hours online
virtual
you know, and so we've had virtual office hours now for quite a while.
Right.
We've had 10 sessions already, and we continue to have them on Fridays going forward, right. You know, for the duration of the session.
Sure.
You know, and honestly, that's where I get inspired and informed, right? It's by talking to people. What do you need? What's going on? What's working for you? What's not working for you?
Yeah.
You know, I've had more conversations about schools in the last couple of months than I can possibly imagine.
I wonder why.
Yeah. But, you know.
But it certainly has been the hot topic. Absolutely.
Yeah. Just to, and I hear from parents, I hear from students, I hear from everybody.
And maybe a few teachers along the way.
Definitely hearing from teachers and administrators and, you know, school nurses. I mean, everyone.
Everyone. Start peeling back the onion, so to speak, there are so many layers to it.
Yep.
It's just a mix.
Yeah.
You know, schools are part of the community. It takes a village, literally, of folks to do that.
Right.
So it's no surprise if you stop and think about it. Unfortunately, sometimes the sound bites come and it's just, you know, that's quick and it's easy and you don't get into the details.
Yeah.
That's
why I'm so proud to have really dedicated myself and my staff and all of us to being in the community meetings, being in at the Strawberry, right? I certainly get feedback when I'm at the Strawberry.
Sure.
Right? You know, coming to town council meetings and, you know, Attleboro has, a big celebration for Martin Luther King Day every year that I make sure that I'm at, you know, and that's also part of how I hear about transportation, you know, and how this Senate district is serviced by not one, not two, but three, but four different commuter rail lines, such that if you're trying to get even from one station to another, you can't get there. You got to go, it takes like 4 hours to go all the way in and back out.
Anybody who knows the mass transportation system, it's generally spokes in the wheel leading to Boston.
Right.
So trying to go across the wheel, forget it.
And it's a huge problem, actually, especially for our seniors who are trying to access health care.
Right.
To Sturdy Memorial Hospital in Attleboro, for example. And people who live here in Franklin or Norfolk or, some of the other surrounding towns. Trying to get to Sturdy on public transportation is basically impossible because it's not within the same regional transit area.
Yeah.
And so, so that's one of the things that I've been working about, that I've had conversations with the Secretary of Transportation to try to fix that particular problem.
Sure.
Because that's a real problem.
Yeah.
And also why, with the transportation bond bill that the legislature just passed, I secured $3.5 million for the city of Attleboro related to transportation issues and money dedicated to the Franklin community, commuter rail line.
Right.
And also a rail trail, right? Because that's transportation too.
Yes.
So you think broadly and creatively and listen to people. People don't always agree, which I would expect.
But at least have the conversation.
Yeah, but let's have the conversation.
Discourse and figure things out.
Yeah, and I continue to find, frankly, that almost every time, the things that unite us and unify us are greater than the things that divide us.
Absolutely.
So I'm really, it's such a privilege to, to come to the firefighter ceremony and
a historic day.
That was amazing. That was just phenomenal.
Yep.
And I was really, really proud to collaborate with the other members of the legislative delegation and also with local government town administration to make that happen.
Yeah.
You know, and to see it come to fruition is awesome, right? I mean, what a great thing for this community. You know, same way I felt, honestly, when the vote by mail application showed up in my mailbox. I said, oh, look, we did that. You know, I worked for that. And here it is. Here it is in my mailbox. That's amazing. I worked real hard to make that happen.
Yeah.
You know, and the ballot showed up, I dropped it off, and we're all set. Which is great. So lots and lots and lots of good stuff done this session. And there's still so much more to go.
A lot of challenges to address, for sure.
So much more to go. Funding the Student Opportunity Act, for example. Making more significant advancements on maternal health and reproductive health, right? I mean, we have so much more to do. We still have a number of bills in conference committee.
Sure. sure.
You know, immigrant rights. I mean, we sort of, you name it, we still have to work on it.
Yeah.
And all of the local issues that we continue to work on,
right.
You know, for schools throughout the district to, you know, help generate better education equity, to, you know, help educate, provide transportation equity, climate. I mean, you know, those are local issues that sometimes we address through policy, and sometimes we address through other services to our municipalities.
Right.
And it is fantastic to be able to really help push those things through and make those things happen, to, you know, help folks when we go back to going to an office, be able to get to work on time without your train catching on fire, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, and for people to be able to afford to go to the doctor,
yeah.
and to get, you know, a good education, to be able to buy a house if that is what you want.
Sure. You affordable.
Know, affordable house. And we have work to do.
Absolutely.
So I am excited to keep going for the rest of this term, and also certainly keep going into the next term forward into the future.
Well, thank you very much for taking some of your time. There's enough on the plate. I'm sure we could still be talking for several more minutes, if not into hours. But that also gives us an opportunity to come back again, too.
And I would love it, Steve. Anytime you like.
Excellent.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. And in the show notes, we'll include links to your page, your email, and all the contact information. So if people didn't have their pens and pencils listening to this,
great.
They'll be able to get the show notes and find out.
Fabulous. I appreciate that. Thank you so much.
We are now producing this in collaboration with Franklin TV and Franklin Public Radio, WFPR-FM. This podcast is my public service effort for Franklin, but we can't do it alone. We can always use your help. How can you help? If you can use the information you find here, please tell your friends and neighbors. If you don't like something here, please let me know. Through this feedback loop, we can continue to make improvements. And I thank you for listening. For additional information, please visit franklinmatters.org. If you have questions or comments, you can reach me directly at suresteve@gmail.com. The music for the intro and exit was provided by Michael Clark and the group East of Shirley. The piece is titled Ernesto Mañana. Copyright Michael Clark and Tin Type Tunes and used with their permission. I hope you enjoy. You can also subscribe and listen to Franklin Matters Radio on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. Search in podcasts for Franklin Matters.